and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Davis.
And Benjamin Holden.
Today's podcast is really exciting because we have some news. So if you're listening to the podcast, we appreciate you guys an awful lot. And because you're listening, you know a day early before any other person that the My Coach School app is releasing on the 19th of November.
This is the thing now. Now you've said that, there's going to be some pushback again with the app.
No, there's not. If you guys know the story of the app, it's been a little bit pushed back over the course.
13 months it's taken.
It's taken 13 months and we were promised 6, which is obviously a really hard thing when you have thousands of members who think you are launching an app in March, and then June, and then August, and it got pushed back. The reason for this is because it's a custom-built app, and it's completely built from scratch by us, so it's not like, it's not an app that we've just put the logo on, or it's completely different to anything you will have ever seen. It's the best thing in the whole entire world.
I said this to Cal the other day, and this is no disrespect to other people who also do this with apps, but it's not some bullshit app where we've just signed up and someone's give us a blueprint and we put our logo on it.
Yeah.
It's literally been built from the ground up. Even little things on there where there's little things on the weight graph where there's like a little circle. You don't know how long you have to spend on getting that little circle. It makes me really respect other apps that I'm using a lot more.
Yeah, 100%.
But if you want to find out also more about the app, you can also click the link in the description in the YouTube video or in the podcast notes, because we will also have a page with lots of information on the app as well, where you can sign up for early opt-in.
Early opt-in?
With a dizzy.
With a discount. I've never used the phrase dizzy for discount. I don't think a lot of people would know what dizzy means.
I think they would.
But yeah, if you sign up, you're going to get notified about a hella crazy discount, and we're so excited. We know how excited all of our members are, and new pending members will be when they have the My Coach School app. So 19th, save the date, write on your forehead, put it on a sticky note on your mirror, chant it every night. Woo! app. And we continue.
Other exciting news
is there
this, well, my YouTube video will already be up, but me and Cal did a YouTube video last week where I was pregnant for 24 hours.
Oh, yeah.
I bought a pregnancy suit from, I don't know where it was from, actually.
Was it not from Amazon, surely?
No, it wasn't from, are you joking? It cost me an arm and a leg. It was so real.
I wonder why. I was going to try and pick it up then and find it. It's just like porcelain.
We can go to the YouTube video on my YouTube.
Just like a squishy.
I think it was £250. You could get a...
No, it wasn't. Are you sending it back?
No, I'm fucking keeping it. What's that face for?
What are you going to say to the accountant when they're like, is this a business expense?
So yeah, it bloody is.
Yeah, it's a pregnancy belly. Yeah. Wow.
You could get silicone ones, which are £500.
They're going to just be confused.
I felt like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Do you know what? So to be fair, I bet like the silicone ones are actually used in like movies and films and TV. Like pregnancy bellies.
I think they were used for theatre and stuff.
But you were actually quite good at being pregnant for the day, weren't you?
No, I wasn't. I was moaning after a couple of hours. I couldn't do 9 months, tell you that right now. No chance.
Thank you.
So yeah, head over, check it out. It was very, very funny. We also have a giveaway competition for you today as well. And all you have to do is go on to Apple or Spotify.
I don't know if Spotify have it.
I think it's Apple. Go on to Apple Podcasts and Lucy will explain how you do it because it is very confusing as well. But hop over onto Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review of the podcast because you fucking love it. And leave a little note on there and also leave your Instagram handle on there as well so that we can find you. We're going to select someone at random at the end of the month to win a My Protein giveaway bundle, which will be worth, I don't know, quite a bit because we'll throw quite a lot of goodies in there for you. And yeah, Lucy, explain how it works.
Yeah, so the way that you do it, so you'd think you could just click on the podcast like it's already in your like subscribe list, but you cannot do that. I don't know why. You have to go to the search bar, type in the Not So Fit Couple podcast, click on it, scroll down, and there'll be the little stars. Mm-hmm. Again, obviously, but 5 star. Click that and then you can write a little review, leave your Instagram handle. I think it's like submit or save or whatever it is. It literally takes 2 seconds, but for us, it really helps us in terms of just like the podcast, getting it pushed out and getting more people listening to it, which is obviously an amazing thing because we love the podcast and we think you guys do as well. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it'd mean a lot to us if you can do it personally.
Yeah, it would. It would really mean a lot to us. And today's episode is a killer episode. It's a really cool episode.
Firstly, I wanted to talk about something that I've had quite a few questions about. Again, it always crops up in its intermittent fasting. I think a lot of people still don't really understand it or know what it is. So I just wanted to, I know we've done spoke about it before, but I really wanted to kind of just brush over some of the stuff, some of the myths, some of the ways that you can use it, and some of the things to probably avoid.
Yeah. I was just explaining to Cal before what I find quite frustrating about intermittent fasting, the way people, because there's levels, I think, of intermittent fasting where people really go hard, do like 5-2, or they really strictly stick to like 16-8, for example. However, with intermittent fasting, it doesn't need to be so like categorized. And a lot of people say on social media, you're skipping breakfast. You're not skipping a meal. You're not eating those calories in that food. You're just having it later in the day. So for example, I got up this morning, had a coffee, and then I went to the gym and I had breakfast at 11 o'clock. I didn't skip it. I've just pushed all my meals back. I stop eating it around what, 9:45 p.m. Yeah. So there's not that 16:8 categorized thing, but I am technically fasting in the morning because I have breakfast later and I train fasted. Yeah.
Do you know what? Some people moan about it and get a bit arsy about it because they're like, breakfast is the best meal of the day. Like, well, eggs still taste the same at 11 or 12 o'clock. Do you know what I mean?
My oat bowl.
Yeah, still tastes exactly
the same. Fantastic.
Do you know what my theory is? And I know it's not 100% true. Of who created intermittent fasting? Mm. People who love brunch.
That's a good theory.
Because it's in between breakfast and lunch. So it doesn't mean you're skipping breakfast because those people who have brunch, I'm a big brunch man, by the way, just have eggs, bacon, sausage a little bit later on the day.
Yeah.
That is my theory. People who love brunch created intermittent fasting. But I'm sticking to that. You can't tell me otherwise.
No, I'd trademark that. like one of the things is, it's like I wake up in the morning, wake up at 6:30. I'm not hungry.
What was that impression then you just did by?
So it was like anger.
It's husk that came from the chest. Speak with chest.
Speak with chest. No, but I'm generally not hungry. So calm down then. I'm genuinely not hungry, so I'm not gonna force feed myself just because that's having breakfast as soon as you wake up is the social norm thing to do. I'm not hungry and I don't like training on a full stomach. It makes me feel really sick and stodgy. Therefore, I don't do it. There's no magical reason why I train fasted. It's not for fat loss. It's for nothing like that. I'm still strong when I train without food. It's all these little fads that get pulled from social media that's like, oh, if you're training fasted, does it mean you're aiming to burn fat? I'm categorically not. I just don't want to throw up in my session.
Yeah. And you're not creating any more of a deficit, by the way, by you're just moving the meal timings along and that's all you're doing. And if you're a bit of a greedy fucker like me as well, you get hungry at night, then you just get more bang for your buck because you're just moving your foods further along the day where your appetite is potentially higher as well. So all you're doing is basically matching where your hunger is in the day. It's a simple way of looking at it. And the thing is as well, like, I've just pulled up the definition before of intermittent fasting and I think things like definitions can sometimes confuse people.
Yeah.
So if you look on Google, intermittent fasting is an eating plan that switches between fasting and eating on a regular schedule. Research shows that intermittent fasting is a way to manage your weight and prevent or even reverse some forms of the disease. I think that's confusing in itself. I mean, I think there's probably more correlation than causation with intermittent fasting. That, and what I mean by this is people who probably intermittent fast are potentially more likely to stick to their diet, and that's why they lose weight, rather than the intermittent fasting actually causing the weight loss. That's just me stabbing in the dark of it. And when it's talking about forms of disease, I don't know how you actually pronounce this because I always get it wrong, but I call it autophagy.
Autophagy?
Yeah.
What are you saying there?
Autophagy, it's where the body is, the body's
way. How are you spelling that?
Auto, P-H-A-G-Y.
Autophagy?
Yeah. It's Autophagy.
Autophagy. Yeah. Like fear yoga.
The body's way of cleaning out damaged cells in order to like regenerate new ones and healthier ones. It's one of the ways that like helps prevent cancer.
There's a lot of books on that, isn't there? There's a guy who's done a lot of books on intermittent fasting.
Yeah, but it's not... sticking to a calorie deficit does the same thing. So it's not intermittent fasting that does it. It's being in a deficit that also helps damage out, clear out damaged cells.
I guess that's a fad as well, which you've kind of just described by saying being in a calorie deficit is a point of fat loss and weight loss. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people think... people only fast to eat less food. I'm nearly in a surplus and I fast. Do you know what I mean? It's not, I just prefer to have more food later on in my day, and that's personal preference.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I'm in a calorie deficit. I know a lot of people do, but I don't. That's not like you have to be in a calorie deficit. That is the exact reason why people do intermittent fasting. I'm literally just close to being in a surplus and I eat in a smaller time frame.
Yeah.
But technically, do I if I finish eating at 9:45 p.m.?
What do you mean?
So this whole thing about 16:8, where you fast for 16 and eat in an 8-hour window, I start eating at 11 and finish at basically 10 p.m. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's 11 hours.
It doesn't matter though. And this is the thing with like the most popular method, which is 16:8. And basically that means there's no eating between that 16 hour, and you'd look at that and go, that's absolute fuckery, wouldn't you? Like,
yeah.
To look at that from, if you're an everyday person who's not doing intermittent fasting, you'd be like, what? Are you mad?
Yeah.
And then you break it down into, well, I sleep for 8 hours. And potentially, I'm going to the gym for 2 hours. And what I mean by that is taking in consideration travel, shower. So you're busy there 10 hours. You're doing shit and work during the day. So like by the time has passed, like that 16 hours is easily achieved. But also at the same time, you don't need to get caught up in systems. And it's always going to be difficult to try and stick to someone else's system.
Yeah.
Like you can move the goalpost. You can create your own system. And that's what we do with it. Just because like you've looked at someone else's method of doing something doesn't mean you need to stick to that exact. You can adopt things. You can throw away shit that you don't want. Like we've said before, health and fitness is like a toolbox. You're putting your own tools in there, the ones that work for you, and throwing away that doesn't. So you can take that 16:8 principle. You can apply it to your own day, but you can slightly move the goalpost a little bit. I.e. you don't have to start eating at 2 and finish at 10. You can start at 11 and finish at 9 if you really want. You don't have to stick to 16:8. There's no magic in those numbers. That's just a method that someone's come up with and gone 16:8 method.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I feel as though intermittent fasting in general has got... I just think it's got quite a bad rep on social media. As in, like, people think it's, like, a bad thing. I usually interrupt Ben and he apologised then. That was nice. You interrupted me with that.
I was a gentleman.
You are. Like, we've met a lot of people on social media who slander fasting on social media.
And fucking do it.
And do it themselves. We know them. It's like, I really can't wrap my head around that. I'm like, it's not a bad thing. If you do it, you do it.
Yeah.
Why are you then saying it's a bad thing when it's not a bad... It is popular to slate it. And I think it's really strange when you know people and you're like, well... You do it yourself, so you're not really practicing what you preach.
I'm not a fucking diehard fasting zealot, by the way, pushing you down your throat to do it. But I just do it because we train in the morning. By the time we've got home and I've had a shower and a shit, it's probably 11 o'clock, so I'm going to eat
then. That is the exact reason.
Yeah, and most people will be the same, and a lot of people will be the same, though, especially if you train in the morning and you get to work and it's like, oh shit, it's 10 o'clock now.
Yeah, my mum's the same now. Yeah. I remember she started doing it. She was like, I'm just like forcing my porridge down me when I'm not hungry when I wake up. And she was like, I'm just going to start waiting a little bit. And she finds it so much better personally for herself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. I mean, when we look at like the benefits of intermittent fasting, it's essentially, it's just meal timings. And when we look at the nutritional and fat loss pyramid or hierarchy, when we have the fundamentals and the things that you should be prioritizing first in order to achieve weight loss, the first one's going to be calorie intake. That's the most important, i.e. your calorie deficit. Second thing is going to be looking at your micronutrients. Are you getting enough protein in? The third thing is going to be looking at your micronutrients. Next, then, above that, is going to be nutrient timing. Mm-hmm. So you could be using intermittent fasting, whatever it may be. And last, you've got supplements. So they're the hierarchy of needs. So when you look at intermittent fasting, you're essentially just looking at nutrient timing. It's not massively important. It's more of a habit and routine kind of thing, which is going to aid what you're doing with your diet and your hierarchy of needs.
Yeah, it's a little bit like when you get those people who are really training optimally for something and they categorically say they have to eat protein in that 20-minute window post-training. That's that for them, they think that's optimal. That's nutritional timing, like to the T.
Yeah.
You don't really need to be doing that.
Yeah.
Unless you're like a complete pro.
That's just people have been searching Brogle though, isn't it?
Who?
If you have Google and you have Brogle. The bros like to go on Google and just type in shit to try and satisfy their beliefs.
But even when I was a swimmer, our nutritionist said, you've got to get your protein shake down you right after your session. And I didn't know none the while.
But
I used to have...
That from? It's Shani's whispers.
He just said it. That's what we were told to do. This protein shake, which one at the time that I had, was absolutely minging, and a whole pot of cottage cheese.
What's the stupidest thing someone told you that you've actually done, health and fitness wise?
I mean,
because we've all been there. We've all been told something.
I think for me, when I was a swimmer and I was completely detached from good food and bad food, I was categorically told that I could not eat, and what was good food and what was bad food.
Yeah.
So if I went to reach for a chocolate, I would be told to my face, you can't have that, Lucy, that's bad. That's a bad food. And that's just completely incorrect, like categorizing things so heavily into good food and bad food that I was then scared to even approach foods that were under this umbrella of bad.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever stuck to any fad. I asked the question on Instagram the other day of like shit that you've heard in the fitness industry, that's stupid. I'm trying to look through some of them. But I can't remember off the top of my head of me sticking to anything which was like particularly faddy.
When I was 19, after I'd quit swimming, I subscribed to Booty.
Did you really?
Yeah, me and my sister. It was a freaking fucking laxative. Honestly, this thing, I think it was as well when my eating disorder first started. So I was very drawn to this idea of Booty that was going to cleanse me, and literally just made me shit. Honestly. So yeah, I was subscribed to that. I had like a 24-day thing and it would like rolled over into the next month. So that was something that I quickly realized just wasn't for me. I only did one course of it.
I was trying to think of one. I think the only thing I've done was the stupid shit before lads' holidays, like, I'd do a 2 or 3 day depletion on carbs and then a carb up, like I was doing a bodybuilding show.
That is so weird for a lad's holiday.
I used to eat steak
all
day.
You all used to do yogurt. Didn't you?
I couldn't shit to save my life because I was so bunged up on fats and protein and steaks, and I carb up like mad. But those lads' holidays were all bodybuilding shows.
Hey, but do you remember, actually, you just reminded me, before our Europe trip,
yeah,
before we went to Europe, you introduced me to that. You had really bad eating disorder tendencies here, and you said, okay, for the 3 days before we go, we'll just have steak and broccoli. Do you remember?
Yeah, we did.
Why? And I was like, what? I was like, why?
That is a thing, by the way, in regards to, like, it's not a made-up thing. You, like, before a bodybuilding show, you will have high protein, high fats to try and clear out all the glycogen from the tissue to try and make yourself look as hard as possible, and then you will carb up to look nice and full, but you don't need to do it for
a
fucking holiday.
No, but do you remember? Because I've never heard of this. And that was, what, three or four years ago now? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's definitely also, that's quite heavily involved with your mindset in terms of where you're at psychologically. Like, I didn't really do it like you did it because I was still having potatoes and stuff like that. But you were going through a quite difficult time in terms of your NES.
The other thing that someone mentioned, and this is just off a bit off topic, is someone said, well, one of the things that pisses them off is men versus women portion sizes. I don't know if I mentioned this on last week's podcast. I've never really seen that.
Men versus women portion sizes.
I don't know if that's a social construct where she feels like she can't, because it was a girl who sent over, where she feels she's kind of been misled or socially coached by other males, like, oh, we should eat more. I don't know what it is, but I've never seen physically on packaging male versus portion sizes. The only other thing you see is when you look at the recommended calorie intake, is that females should be having less than males, and that's based on the average population. Sorry.
Ours is 2,000, isn't it?
And that's because males are bigger than females.
What's the guys?
2,400, I think it is. Mm-hmm. Or 2,200. I can't actually remember. And that's not me being like, oh, he's a sexist, misogynist pig. Guys are just genetically bigger. There's some stuff where genetics and biology is a fucking thing. We can't just bend over backwards to the PC culture. Like, males are born bigger than females and have higher testosterone levels, so they're going to grow more and be bigger. And that's why they will need more calories, because if you are bigger and heavier, you will expend more energy.
Yeah. Yeah, statistically, yeah. They're just basing it off an average, aren't they? I guess with that portion sizes thing, we eat pretty much the same thing, but we just have slightly different portions. I have more oats than you. I have more yogurt than you. But your meals in the day tend to be dense. Bigger than mine. There's and they're quite a bit dense. More calorie dense. And that is just because you are twice the weight of me.
Yeah.
Maybe triple. No, that's not true.
I'm not even twice the weight of you. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you are.
I'm bloody not.
I know you're not. Are you not?
No, I'm not. Two of you.
Might be. Well, I'm quite dense, actually, so maybe not.
Right, let's move on anyway.
I just describe myself as dense.
The word dense, you know.
I'm muscular.
I like dense and girth. I think that's a really
I don't think girth is a very nice word.
He's a girthy guy. He's dense.
He's a girthy girl.
Why did you say skeletal?
I think a muscular woman is strong. I'm a muscular woman. That's a strong stance.
To fuck you up.
I'm strong.
Fuck you up. You lift heavy shit. Yeah, bro. But yeah, with fasting, you don't have to try and fit into those social constructs or those norms of the 16:8. Try it, give a go. If you don't want to do it, don't fucking do it. If it doesn't work for you, you don't have to. But at first, you probably will feel a little bit hungry because you're trying to adapt to different things and different habits. And whenever you're trying to implement a new habit, it is difficult, whether that's an eating habit or whether that's an everyday habit, it's going to be more difficult.
I guess what's like one important thing to note is people shouldn't like save calories if they're fasting. Like they shouldn't necessarily get to an evening and they have like, I don't know, 1,500 calories left. That's not the place really you want to be, because that's a lot to eat in one go right before bed.
I'm actually going to talk about this in a minute.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you shouldn't just like save. That's a cycle. You've got a different mindset there if you're doing it to save
there's benefits and
shitloads of calories. Yeah.
The other thing I want to talk about, because I did it by accident the other day, and this is another thing as well that often, I think people look at on Facebook and stuff, and it became a bigger trend through lockdown, with cold showers and cold water immersion.
Oh, I spoke about that last. I thought we were going to go into the snacking.
Oh, we can do that then if you want, but
yeah, I think we should do that.
Oh, we'll just do what you want
to
do then.
But to be fair, the way you sent it me on WhatsApp this morning was in the chronological order that I was
Okay,
I've
well, to be
up.
Fair, it fits quite well. What you were talking about anyway, so we'll go into what we're going to talk about, which is nighttime snacking, because you've just talked about one of the points that I was going to mention in regards to saving a lot of calories later on and assumptions about eating late at night based on correlation, not causation. And again, what I mean by that is people who tend to eat a lot later on at night tend to be of a higher BMI. And again, that is more correlation.
Is that a statistic?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's more correlation than causation. And I think there's something that came out years ago in the news with this stat. And what it did was made people think, oh, I can't eat after 6 o'clock. And this is where that stupid notion of not eating fuck all after 6 o'clock came from, because people were scared and duped into it by a correlational study rather than causation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make you heavier by eating later at night. But this is why one of the topics we want to speak about was how you can potentially decrease your snacking later on night, because loads of people do it. I do it sometimes. What was I like with that peanut butter last night? I was balls deep into that nut.
It was almond butter. Yeah. You just did not stop spooning it. I was just staring at you. You did it upstairs as well.
If I was Superman, if someone threw peanut butter at me, dead. I'm dead.
Ooh,
yeah, dead.
What passed? You do though, don't you? Peanut butter's a
almond
one.
Almond butter. Almond butter's stronger than peanut butter.
I had actually had a point here, because I think a lot of the time, snacking before bed is a habit. that has been created over a long period of time. And it becomes almost subconscious that you don't really know you're doing it. It could literally be a bite of something before bed.
It becomes autonomous, is that a word?
It does. It completely becomes autonomous.
I was only thinking autumnal. Is that
autumnals? Autumnal is the season of autumn. Okay.
Thank you.
Like leaves, brown, pumpkin spice latte, which I'm going to get later.
We love a pumpkin spice latte.
I've had one every day since they've come out.
Let's not digress.
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 Does that go backwards?
Yeah, like get away from the point.
Okay, yeah. My point is that it becomes a habit over time. Mm-hmm. And you do it when you're not hungry.
Yep.
You're not actually hungry. We spoke about on the podcast on the bulking episode, the difference between cravings and hunger. And the difference is a lot of the time when you get that little snack before bed, which can sometimes escalate or sometimes it is just a bite of something or a bit of almond butter or peanut butter, it's just something that you automatically do before bed. And the thing is, the way to probably get out of that is to change a habit. Could be like with anything, like biting your nails.
It's recognizing that you're doing it first, though.
Recognizing, identifying that you're doing it. But it was like me, I bit my nails for so many years. I knew I was doing it. I had to break the habit. Mm-hmm. To break a habit, Atomic Habits is a great book, by the way, for this. Make that habit less attractive. Make it harder. So if there's one thing that you have before bed, potentially Ben with the almond butter, I should probably hide it. And if he goes to the cupboard and he's like, oh, it's not there, you just go down to bed.
I was thinking those protein pop rolls that are in the cupboard upstairs, need to get rid of them. Because how often do we...
My protein.
Yeah, but how often do we just go in there and take a nibble of them? Because it's just habit. Should we have a little nibble of pop rolls? We have this really bad habit where we just nibble protein bars and put them back.
I bet we're the only people who do
that.
And then
when I've known there's a little bit left and I go to get it, I know you've been and it pisses me off, but I can't open a new one.
We do that, but again, that is a habit.
Bad habit,
and that always happens before bed. Doing
it, yeah.
It's probably not good for your teeth, though, either. It's constantly nibbling at these things.
Good, that's a good point. Habit one, though.
We are sponsored by MyProtein and the bars are absolutely fucking fantastic, by the way. That's why we can't stop eating them. You can use either my code or Ben's code, which is LucyD, or my coach Benji. Just to let you know.
Yeah, that's a very good point with habits, and I think I'm sometimes quite poor for that, and something that I tried to recognize in this podcast again will probably make me recognize that, oh shit, I do that sometimes, I need to stop doing it. Just on the point that I was speaking about with people eating late, the other kind of misconception with eating later at night is that metabolic rate changes.
Misconception. Yeah.
Misconceptions when you consume something.
Because we've just been talking about food.
Consuming food and thinking about food too much on peanut butters and pop rolls. People's misconception is that metabolic rate changes, so that because my metabolic rate is potentially lower in the evening, I shouldn't eat as much food because I'm not going to utilize the energy as well. And because I'm asleep and not moving as much, it means that's going to be stored as fat. And that's what the general consensus is. And I think that's pushed by people who are chatting shit, basically. But metabolic rate from morning to evening is different, i.e. your metabolic rate is higher in the morning, but your metabolic rate from, say, 12 or noon, afternoon time, to evening before bed and through bedtime is exactly the same.
Yeah.
So if you were going to go off that basis or that ethos, you wouldn't fucking eat apart from in the morning, because that's the only time that metabolic rate is actually really, really high.
Yeah.
So it's got nothing to do with that. Don't be scared about eating late on. Same thing with carbs as well. Like, carbs, you don't know what fucking time of day it is. You can just eat them whenever you want. The reason why most people tend to gain weight from snacking at night is more so because nobody's snacking on fucking carrot sticks and hummus at night, are they? People are wanting satiating stuff, like the good movie foods, like Ben and Jerry's or a full sleeve of Jaffa Cakes.
Yeah.
People are slamming them away. People aren't slamming carrots and hummus.
I like carrots.
Yeah, but you're a weirdo, so it doesn't count.
Carrots and peanut butter is great, by the way.
So the big question is, how do we manage those cravings later in the day? How do we stop going in for the peanut butters and stuff? That's that question to me. Because just saying to people, yeah, enjoy them. Like, listen to your body. Put those foods in. For some people, that's not fucking helpful. For some people, they want to stop
snacking
later on.
Really unhelpful for some people.
And, like, one of the things that we can do, and this is something that you touched on before, is saving some calories for later on the day, i.e. intermittent fasting. the point that you made equally is that saving too much food later on the day can sometimes have a negative impact, because what we do is we just really, really restrict calories too much in the day to where you're ravenously hungry. And even if you save that amount of calories for later on the day, you've allowed yourself that ravenous hunger to build up so much that even if you eat a meal, which is potentially quite calorically dense, you're not full from it. Mm. You could eat your arm and you're still hungry. That's because you just let yourself get so hungry. You're like a bottomless pit that you can just never fill.
Yeah, one of the things with that as well is...
Sorry, that's why when sometimes, if you're done on a Saturday evening, like, I'm not going to eat all day because I'm going for a meal later on. You go for a meal and you're just like an absolute pig.
You just can't stop
eating. It's sometimes better just to have a meal before you go for a meal, because then at least when you go, your hunger isn't absolutely ravenous. So you just sit and have a substantial meal and think, oh, do you know what, I'm done now.
Yeah. I don't think Ben means have a dinner before you go to dinner. It's like have breakfast and have lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
Just one of those points though, when you do have a vast amount of calories before bed, and we are talking quite a lot, like, I don't know, over probably 1,000, 1,500, it can affect your sleep at night. So your actual quality of sleep. Yeah, I mean, you didn't sleep very well at all when you had NES.
It's nighttime eating syndrome, by the way.
Yeah, one of the main concerns goes to acid reflux and indigestion, because our body can do multiple things at once, but sleeping and digestion, once you've had loads of food and then you go to sleep and you're led horizontally, it does affect your GI tract and the way you're eating, acid reflux, feeling sick, your digestion. So you're not actually in a deep sleep. So when you have ridiculous amounts before bed, which is why a lot of people with binge eating disorder do struggle having good quality sleep, because they tend to have a lot of the food before they go to sleep at night. Yeah. And it makes it really difficult. That was more so my point from before, being like, you're saving basically all your calories. That's like that psychologically, that's not a good place to be.
It's almost essentially binge eating there.
People who eat once.
It's classified that if you do it regularly, you have a certain percent of your calories that later on the day, it's almost binge eating. And people who restrict their food intake during the day are also more likely to binge eat at night.
Yeah.
And that was one of the issues that I ran into, that I was saving loads and loads and loads later on, to the point where it developed into an eating disorder.
Mm.
And that's where you've got to be careful between intermittent fasting and eating disorder, because the fucking two are very closely linked. And people who have eating disorders should categorically not, by the way, be intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. Should be dieting. Mm. In that fact. But the other thing that we can do to potentially stop snacking later at night is to have a meal or dinner, your evening meal, which is high in protein and also potentially high in fat.
Yeah.
Because those two are very satiating. Having those two later at night will hopefully suppress your hunger a little bit and suppress those cravings that come on later on the night. So what I tend to do is I'll have a vegetable stir fry. I have it with chicken. So I've got some protein in there with the vegetables, which is a voluminous food in itself. And I'll just cook it in some oil and fat to get my fats, my healthy fats, and some protein, which often helps satiate me. The other one is, it's a bit of a balance. Don't eat too early, don't eat too late. If you're going to eat at 6 o'clock and go to bed at 11, it's a big window where you're going to be hungry in.
It's 5 hours.
Yeah, it is. But that's like the social norms. I have dinner when I get in, 6, 7 o'clock. And then if you're not going to eat till, and that's all your calories gone, of course you're going to be hungry before bed.
Yeah.
At the same time, don't eat a big massive meal right before you go into bed, because you digest it. Blood's going to be going to the digestive system. It's going to keep you awake. Like, it's just not a healthy thing to do. And then, like, for me, I'll have that vegetable stir fry and I'll have the yolk bowl.
The yolk bowl is great. It is on the My Coach School new recipes, which will be on the app.
Yeah. The other thing that you can do, and I used to do this quite often when I was dieting, was I'd have dark chocolate before bed. Again, it's pretty high fat. It's very satiating and it's very rich. So it will suppress appetite quite well. And
it is an appetite suppressor. It's got some of the
health benefits as well, yeah. So dark chocolate's always a good one. Sometimes some nuts, but mate, I'm not eating nuts before bed. I'm not a nut fan before bed. I eat fucking almond butter all day, but I'm not having a handful of nuts. Who does that?
I really love cashews. I'm in a cashew.
Would you before bed? Oh, I think, oh, I really fancy a snack.
I could have a handful of cashews.
You're a weirdo.
Absolutely, I could.
No.
I think they're such a smooth nut.
What? What the fuck's a smooth nut?
I bet there's people listening who've just heard me say smooth nut and they're like, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. As in, like, the taste is so smooth. Like, you've got, like, walnuts and almonds, which are quite harsh, aren't they?
I don't really like
peanuts. You have a cashew and it just kind of melts in your mouth.
No, it doesn't. The only thing that melts in your mouth is Gallagher truffle.
No.
Don't compare cashew to nut.
Comment on YouTube if you think cashew nuts or cashew.
Put a chocolate emoji or nut emoji. I'll tell you what people will be putting right now.
Yeah, chocolate or nut.
I don't like any nuts. I don't have chocolate around it.
That's a silly thing to
be. No, it's not. Apart from peanuts because they're salted to death.
Roasted almonds.
No.
Oh my God.
Give me a chocolate almond any day.
Give me a chocolate raisin. Wow.
Calm yourself right down.
Chocolate raisins, that's my absolute.
Nah, those chocolate things we had in Australia went. What were those stores called?
Coles.
Coles.
If you're listening from Australia.
My God. Sorry, I probably owe Australia about £500 worth of.
Ben just used
food.
To.
I used to eat chocolate nuts in the superstores all the time. But the other thing you didn't do, do you know what the best thing is actually? For avoiding overeating before bed? Go into fucking bed. Go to sleep. You can't fucking eat if you're asleep, can you?
Unless you come back upstairs or down.
Yeah, but you're already asleep. Most people don't do that unless you've got nighttime eating syndrome like I had. Mm. That's the best protocol. The other thing is obviously look at your sleep protocol as well. Because if you're not tired and you can't get to sleep, you need to look at what you're doing before bed, blue light exposure, reading, how much you're on your phone, etc. before you go to bed. And they're pretty much some of the points that I'd implement if you are snacking a lot later on the day. Try some. See how you go.
Yeah, 100%. And now we can talk about the cold showers, which you had mentioned before.
The only reason I'm going to speak about this is because the other day I was in the shower, had a great shower. Do you know when you get a shower and you're like, this is a great shower, so I'm going to spend a bit longer in it? I don't often spend that long in the shower because I'm just like in, out, ready, go.
There's different categories of shower for me. I'm having a bod wash, I'm in and out, I'm washing my body, I'm not washing my hair. If I'm having a relaxing shower, washing my hair and shaving my legs and exfoliating, I'm going to be in there for so much longer. Mm. Every girl will understand exactly what I mean there. Different categories of shower. Really kind of being in there for
guys
a long
do
time
a different
washing
one.
My hair.
There's one that guys do at the sink, which is just armpit and balls. The odour zones.
You need to wash your knees then as well.
Why?
Your knees stink.
Oh, thanks. Why do my knees stink?
Ben has these freaking knee sleeves.
Everyone has this problem.
No. Ben's knee sleeves, I don't think they've been washed since you bought them.
Yes, they have. They were in the washing machine. No, fact, by the way, anyone who's got knee sleeves who trains and has put them in the washing machine, they come out no different.
Right.
The only way that you would get rid of that smell if you were to put them on a fucking bonfire and then take them off.
And then buy a new pair.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, the other month, Ben had these knee sleeves on and me and Kyle were like, something really stinks.
You were pointing
at that
guy. We
didn't know what it was. I was pointing at the guy next to me. I was saying, I think he's like something really, but it smells like, it doesn't smell like sweat. It smells like acid, like a sour, acidic poo or something. Like really.
Acidic poo.
But then obviously we realized it was Ben's knee sleeves. They and he had them on this morning and he turned around and I was just speaking to Cal. Ben had walked past and I went, bloody fucking stink. And Cal went, he hasn't got them on anymore.
When it hits
so
you,
your knees,
it's like someone's popped a water balloon full of piss on
your
face,
knees,
isn't it? It's horrible.
Your knees need a what you just said there, a sink wash.
No, I mean, I've had a shower.
Yeah, because I told you to.
I was going to get one. Like, I wasn't going to get a shower.
Stinky knee
sleeves.
Would
you take me for it? Yeah, but the knee sleeves are disgusting. They're horrible. They're horrible.
We'll buy him a new pair. It's just not talking
If anyone pisses me off, I'm just going to mail them a knee sleeves.
They'd pass out.
Oh,
that's worse
a funny
than,
video
yesterday. That's worse than popping
Cal
your tea bags.
Cal was showing me a TikTok of the ammonia videos on you know,
ammonia, yeah.
Yeah, where you do the sniffing salts as this guy is sleeping in his car. He just conked back like that. Deep breathing, really heavy snoring. This guy snaps one of those ammonia sticks and put it right underneath his nose. He's like,
he does shoot it, yeah. I don't know why I find that so funny. If you've ever,
like
they're horrible though, those sniffing rock salts.
Yeah, I've done it before when I was lifting, it blows your head off.
No.
Never mind when you sleep though. That must be horrible. Anyway, back to our cold showers.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reason why is because I was getting a shower anyway. And then I had a great shower, finished the shower, and I turned the off knob, I turned the cold knob. So I had a great shower, boom, cold water, pissed on my whole day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have you ever done that? Whole day ruined, might as well get back in bed.
I think cold showers can be wonderful. I've just not had, I went through a period of doing it for like 2 months.
Not when it's not expected.
But I've not had one for a very long time.
Not when it's not expected though.
Yeah.
You've got to be ready for that shit.
It has to be cold, I think, before you go in.
Yeah.
Because if you're nice and warm and then turn it cold, that's a real shock to your system.
Well, that's like hot and cold therapy, which I briefly touch on. But yeah,
I think it's called hydrotherapy.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. There's a big sort of rage on this through lockdown, which dispels some misfires because a lot of people have been jumping on the bandwagon with it. And people just hyperventilating with it and think it's going to recover better when you don't. So first, the cold showers or cold water immersion does not increase your testosterone.
Is that what?
People think it increases testosterone.
It would shrivel your balls instead.
It's to do with your serum testosterone, and it doesn't increase it, by the way. If anything, it fucking hinders it. Because it does the opposing effects. Like, people use it to try and suppress inflammation, which is what you want from when you're lifting. You want inflammation of the cells when you're training. So the reduction of muscle temperature, like, you slow down that process. Mm-hmm. So you don't want. If the primary like objective is to build and repair muscle, like, you shouldn't really be using ice baths. I think the reason why people look at them and go, "Oh, that looks good," is because Mo Farah or Usain Bolt's been sitting in a wheelie bin at the side of the Olympics in a cold ice bath, and they use that really small factor of the trains to determine someone's greater success. Mm-hmm. These copy role models. It doesn't actually do anything. There was a study also where they're looking at cold water immersion versus active recovery, and to see what like works best, and active recovery is far better. So post-workout, if you're absolutely goosed, it's better just to sit on a bike for 5 or 10 minutes than to sit in an ice bath for recovery.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the level though. Like, we used to have ice baths when we swam.
It doesn't depend on the level. It's fucking study which has showed.
One study.
There's been multiple studies.
Hmm.
What are you trying to say?
I just feel like they do have their place sometimes.
They have their place. And do you know what the place is?
Vasoconstriction and vasodilation.
Yeah, but their place is psychological.
Okay. I'm going to do some more research.
The physiological... No, I'm not saying it doesn't have some kind of impact.
It has some sort of impact.
But it doesn't have a big enough impact to be like, ice bath's great. You better sitting on a bike and just pedaling for post-recovery than an ice bath.
Yeah, I get that.
So why not do it?
I'm toying by with the way, idea that they still
I'm saying
have.
This. I'm going to have an ice bath in my house and I'm going to have a sauna because the psychological benefits from it are great.
Yeah, well, the psychological benefits in terms of like, it helps reduce stress.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have heard of it in calls like the Wim Hof method, isn't it?
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things is it does increase endorphins and it reduces your stress levels. And the point with the cold showers, this is not technically talking about like recovery or anything that's to do with ice baths.
Yeah, so you're talking about health benefits.
Yeah, health benefits of cold showers imposes a small amount of stress. I would say it's a large amount of stress. on your body.
I'm more stressed when I get out.
Yeah, which is really cold. Which leads to a process called hardening. And this means that your nervous system gradually gets used to handling moderate levels of stress. The hardening process helps you to keep a cool head the next time you find yourself in a stressful situation.
Oh, hardening.
Wim Hof has called it hardening. But the opposite effect for me,
hardening. My penile goes inside
me. No. The process is called hardening, which means that your nervous system gradually gets used to handling stress. So because you've put yourself in a stressful situation, like under this ice-cold shower, in everyday life, as your life progresses through the weeks, the more cold showers you have, you're building up layers.
Ogres have layers, like onions.
Onions. That they can tolerate it.
Yeah.
I think that's more of like a wellness benefit, isn't it?
There's health and wellness benefits. I'm purely talking about physical performance and recovery.
Mm.
There's no real benefit. There's health and wellness benefits. Obviously, one of those being psychological, because ice baths have a positive effect on the central nervous system, which helps you sleep and feel better. And then also, it helps something called T helper cells, which help the immune system as well. Yeah. So it increases beta endorphins and helps activate the sympathetic nervous system, which can sometimes give a feeling of like well-being and optimism as well. So essentially the main benefits of cold showers are mental, but like you said as well, willpower. Like there's not much that's going to happen in your day that's potentially harder than sitting in a freezing cold ice bath freezing your tits off.
Yeah, I think a massive benefit is the aspects that it brings to your daily life in terms of willpower. Like managing to get up and put yourself in a cold shower. People do it for minutes, they do it for seconds, whatever it is. Or when people go into a lake and they dip under and they do it as like, that is like hydrotherapy. How cold
was that one we did at that Gymshark shoot, by the way? Oh yeah, my God.
Freezing.
I got up to my ankles and I was like, nope.
Yeah, I swam across, didn't I? Yeah. That was really dangerous, Lucy. But yeah, increase willpower.
Yeah.
Mental toughness.
I'll have one when we get in the new house eventually. Sauna and
Ben,
an ice bath.
Ben
for
really
cold, hot
wants,
and cold water therapy, is it called?
Yeah, Ben really wants a plunge pool.
Not a plunge pool. Just, well, it's kind
it
of.
It is a plunge pool.
A little bit different, but yeah. But I think that was all I noticed. I had on ice baths and cold water therapy.
No, it was for me, but you've actually reminded me that I should probably start doing it again.
Cold shower. We were doing them through lockdown again. It was more so the mental thing. You do feel refreshed sometimes when you get out of a cold shower. You're like, oh. I think it's harder in winter though, because you're like, you get in, it's cold. You're in the shower, it's cold. You get out, it's cold.
Oh, it's cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, though, it's just something feels that the more you do it, like when you've done it for a long period, I mean, yeah, this is, if you live in Australia and you're basking in the gorgeous sunshine, you know, I'd be having cold showers all the time. We're talking about like being in the UK, being in the freezing cold. What have you done with your headphone?
Just got a chair.
Being in the freezing cold, doing it, getting out, the willpower, the mental strength. But I think it takes quite a long time to be able to create a habit of it and do it consistently. I've completely got out of that habit. I've not done it for months. We did it for months and then we stopped for months.
Yeah.
So it might be quite hard for us to get back into it, and it'll be a good 2 months consistently
habits.
Doing it before we create a strong enough habit that it does just become subconscious and we automatically
turn it. Not that awesome doing cold showers, I like, I'll sit in a cold plunge pool because it feels a bit more, feels a bit, feels a bit more alpha.
Yeah, no,
what?
I don't think it does.
I think it does.
When I sit in it, I'm not going to grunt. I'm going to go, oh, it's cold.
I was going to hold you under.
I'm good in water, though. You're not the best in water.
Yeah, but it's fucking 4 foot deep. So I'm going to drown. If it's anything deeper, then that's where I start to panic a little bit.
You start to panic when you can't put your toes on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always been a bit of a situation, hasn't it?
Indeed. But thank you guys for listening. Really appreciate you tuning in again to this episode. I will just remind you that we are running a competition from this episode. You can win yourself a load of MyProtein goodies if you leave a 5-star review on the podcast, which we will really, really appreciate. A massive, massive thank you. We haven't done it yet, but you will have been, for all those who attended the MCS 10 event.
Oh my God, yeah, you will have been.
So we're recording this episode
2 weeks ago.
We're recording this episode 2 or 3 days before the MCS 10 event.
12 days ago.
And also my birthday. So we haven't done it yet, but we're just saying thank you for all the people who attended.
Yeah, we're really, really excited. It's this Saturday. Yeah. And we're hoping to continue to raise as much money as we can for Breast Cancer Now, which is really, really an incredible charity. But yeah, that event hopefully will have been absolutely amazing. Looking at our little calendar on the wall.
Yes. I've got a calendar we're filling all week.
I was just looking at the cameras before. I was like, I hope to God they can't see that because there's so much stuff in it that we're going to have to blur it out.
Yeah.
If you guys can see it, because it's all the stuff to do with the app, we'll have to double check that.
Yes.
But yeah, thank you so much for listening, guys. Don't forget, our app does launch on the 19th of November, which is a Friday. Get yourself prepared. Make sure you do sign up to the waiting list so you are notified. It's going to be incredible. We're very, very excited. And as always, we do appreciate your support on everything that myself and Ben do.
Indeed. Have a wonderful rest of your day, wherever you are in the world.
And we'll catch you in next week's episode.
Bye, guys.